Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. Today, I am talking to the poet, author, activist, and speaker, Jacqueline Suskin. Jacqueline has composed over 40,000 poems with her ongoing improvisational writing project, Poem Store. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and Yes Magazine, and she is the author of 6 books, including Help in the Dark Season, and her most recent book is Every Day is a Poem. Find clarity, find relief, and see beauty in every moment. Welcome, Jacqueline, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's beautiful that you're here with us today. I've had the joy of having your new book close, having had it close by the last weeks and reading it. Your newest book, Every Day is a Poem, in this you really aim to support us to feel relief, to see the beauty, even in the darkest times. We are in some dark times in many ways, but what I love about poetry is there always is a bittersweet. There's always this juxtaposition of the darkness, and then somewhere there's a sliver of beauty. So how can poetry help us as a self-help practice? How can it help us to learn the art of slowing down and loving limitlessly?
Wow, that was perfectly said there. I think that just to play off of that well-captured summary of my book, I think basically what I like to offer up to people is this reflection that poetry gives in this really condensed and direct way. When I read a poem, if I'm hurting or suffering or if I'm rejoicing, usually I find something in it that's reflected back to me that is affirming. So to see the pain of another person described so succinctly, or to see my own pain described as I write, is just an incredibly healing and transformative experience. But then also, I think this book kind of tries to guide people in a way of just how to open up to all of the details and the beauty that surround us all the time. And, you know, we read a lot in the wellness world about, you know, all types of mindfulness and, you know, attention to gratitude and all this detail that kind of fills up our life. But I think poetry is the thing that does that so perfectly and has throughout all its entire history. So it's this art form that kind of just allows for the reader or the writer to slip into this place of exactness, almost like no words are not perfect for whatever this writer is trying to say. You cut away all of the excess so that you find the root of either your pain or your joy. And to me, that is just such a healing experience, to whittle away and to cut away anything that's unnecessary and really just look at the source.
Beautiful. Yeah, poetry has, it really has this gift of deep acceptance of what is. I think that's what I, as a songwriter, that's not always present, but in poetry, you can put a garbage can next to the sunset, or you can put, right? You can put, I don't know, Tibetan singing bells next to the woman cooking her chicken soup or something. Mm-hmm. And it just allows us to deeply relax into the lives that we actually have. So I'm sitting here in Berlin, I'm sitting here in Germany, and we have a love for Rainer Maria Rilke. And Rilke said a quote, which I love very much: be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers which cannot be given to you, because you would not be able to live them, and the point is to live everything. Can you share with us, Jacqueline, a little bit more about curiosity and the art of asking good questions, and why that practice of asking really good questions is so important to creating great poetry?
Yeah, there's a chapter in my book called Share Your Answers. And I do think at the heart of most poetry, that reflection I'm talking about comes from the poet trying to answer something that's been working within them or in the world that surrounds them. And so as you're doing this for yourself, if you're looking at your life and trying to dig deeper, what you're typically doing is asking and wanting to know more. And I think that's just such a core aspect of being a human. And the human experience revolves around these constant questions and learning more and wanting to know more and never actually knowing. And there's a whole chapter in the book about making meaning and how meaning is a choice. And we choose mm-hmm. our answers. We choose our meaning. And that, to me, is one of the most excellent things about being human, is to know that we are making it all up, to know that we are the ones who hold the power to craft our realities and to answer our questions. And I think that poetry is often lending itself to that practice, to the deeper questioning, to maybe providing answers that you discover, but that the openness of that is you will always be able to write another poem and question the last thing that you wrote.
Beautifully said. Yeah, you talk a lot about in the book of just relaxing into the mystery. I think that is also the beauty of poetry. Like you said, to ask the questions, maybe even get an answer, and maybe the next morning wake up and realize that the answer's changed, or the question's changed, or we have another poem to write on this exploration process that we have in being human. In the book, in the very beginning of the book, you talk about falling in love with awe. And I looked up the word. It says it's a feeling of reverential respect mixed with fear or wonder. So how would you define awe, and what attracted you to the awesomeness of being in awe of things, or living awe?
Yeah, it's such a word that I think that word came to me about 8 years ago or so. And I just realized that definition is so complex, and it kind of holds the exactness of this feeling that I most often connect with. And mm-hmm. I think that lives through my poetry in this way, where I'm able to balance like the wonder of being alive, the wonder of noticing things and taking in every detail, and being the like the person who observes things is what I consider the poet to be, a person who is constantly in observation. But then the balance of that is this sense of fear and reverential respect, which to me is the complicated and interesting part of it. It's not just rejoicing in the wonder. It's also having this deep respect. And to me, the fear is less, I'm afraid, but more of, oh, there's so much that's unknown, and there's so much loss and impermanence that is built into being alive. And so I'm in awe of that also. And I like that the word doesn't exclude the darkness, because I think that's one of the richest aspects of poetry, is that it can hold this sense of light and dark, and the word awe does that also. So I like to introduce people to that as a concept that to me sits at the very helm of poetry. I think it guides poets. That sense of awe is what kind of maybe suggests that a poem should be alive, or maybe should, you know, inspire someone to just at least pay attention to that kind of mindset, because it enriches everything. And I think that that's the thesis of this book, actually, is that it's not necessarily a writing practice that I'm looking to offer people, although there are all these exercises throughout the book. It's more of a mindset practice and a poetic mindfulness that I feel like everyone has access to, even if they don't want to write.
I mean, beautiful. I mean, trees are deeply rooted in the dark soil. Babies are nurtured in the dark belly. And it does seem that in our world, we often see dark as negative and not the nurturing or the awesome force that it is, that everyone's seeking the light and the joy. And I think you're absolutely right on that poetry allows us to, you know, kind of relax. Like I said in the beginning, the bittersweet. I mean, I was going to ask you, how do we embrace this feeling of awe or wonder in light of things that are very horrific and ugly, which is, I'm assuming, what's going to make the writing also deeper? Things like wildfires or lung cancer, or we're in the middle of a pandemic. How can we carry that heaviness or that uncertainty or exhaustion with certain themes, and at the same time look for a sliver of beauty that can help us through these complex times?
I look to history and the poetics that have driven us through history, all of the poets and writers and artists and people who choose maybe to even lean further into all of those horrific things, to kind of pick them apart and see, how do they circle back to the light? How do they connect to, you know, evolution or transformation? And that usually, even in the hardest things like grief and loss, which I think is the most consistent feeling I'm noticing everyone living in these days, is just this great sense of grief and loss. Poetry is like this buoy in that. It's this offering that says, yeah, look at that. Look at it even harder. Don't turn away from it. But also, in the midst of looking at it, look what else is around it. You know, you lose someone, they pass away, the grief that comes then also connects you further, perhaps with the rest of your family you haven't spoken to, or a place where that person lived, or just even evoking their spirit now in a new way because they're gone. And it's almost as if this perfect balance of everything that's so hard offers us this chance to better focus on the things that are still left over for us to rejoice in. And to me, that's like this is something I talk about a lot, when I think that is not necessarily easy to tap into, but you hold hope and hopelessness at the same time. You don't vacillate mm-hmm. between the two. You don't say, oh, today I'll be hopeful, and then I'll give myself some space for hopelessness, and then I'll be hopeful again. No, you hold them both all at once. And to me, I think a really good poem does that. It doesn't deny the atrocity, and it doesn't turn away from that, but it also allows the beauty to live right beside it.
Which means we're pretty vast and have big, big hearts if we can hold mm-hmm. so many emotions at the same time. Give me five mm-hmm. things, Jacqueline, think about it, and I know there are many more, but give me five things that have awed you into being.
Well, I'm a ecstatic earth worshiper, so the forest and the redwoods are a huge inspiration for me. I'm also completely in awe of my cat. I love the thought of having a pet be close enough to see their actions and the details of their little perfect body and watch them so carefully. And then I'm in awe of the way people come together. Every mutual aid action that's happening across the world right now has just filled me with such a deep sense of awe. Mm-hmm. And I'm in awe of food. I'm really connected to growing food and eating food, and the action of, you know, watching something come from a seed and then be made into a beautiful meal on my plate. And in that sense, I'm also in awe of the people I get to share those meals with, and that sense of home and place that comes from that whole cycle.
Oh, beautiful. In the morning when the sun rises, what do you tune into? Do you have any morning rituals? How does a poet start her day? Or how do you end your day? Is there a certain ritual that you create so that you can be more attentive to all these moments of beauty that are surrounding you?
Yeah, I have kept a ritual morning and night for the last over a decade, probably almost 17 years at this point. I have every morning and every night I sit at an altar. And this altar kind of changes according to where I live or sometimes the seasons. But it's usually pretty earth-based. And I just sit and take in the moment of rising and the moment of the day ends. And this practice is ever evolving. Sometimes I meditate for a long time. Sometimes I pray. Sometimes I just stare and clear my mind. And sometimes I write at the altar. But just having a place to show up every morning and every night and just be grateful and feel my purpose and kind of check into my place on the planet and just have that ritual action of showing up and recognizing what I'm doing every day. That's been such a grounding and healing practice for me.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Jacqueline, we're going to take a very short break and then we'll be back with more about poetry.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is David Strickle. I'm excited to share my brand new show, The Stream of David Live, right here on OM Times Radio. Each week, I'll have exciting guests, and I'll channel the eternal wisdom of The Stream, a group of non-physical entities whose teachings have transformed lives all over the world. So join us for an uplifting hour each Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's The Stream of David Live right here on OM Times Radio.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. My name is Kara Johnson, and today I'm with Jacqueline Suskin, author, poet, and activist, and we are exploring the wisdom and counsel her perspective holds towards creating well-being through having a poetry practice. So, Jacqueline, poetry helps us bridge the gap. You talk about this in your book, which is very beautiful, how it helps us bridge the gap so that we can see where our contrasting ideas actually overlap. Themes such as families, love, trust, hope. How can we use poetry and the poetic means that we have available to close the gap? We're in a time, there's a lot of division, it seems, between many people. So can we use these mindsets to bring us closer to each other?
Yeah, I see this practice of poetry as actually just an extension of practicing communication. And a lot of these issues that come up that are this gap that I think you're talking about, but that is really something that arrives from a lack of ability to communicate. And that is something I just see so much in any community I'm in, any place where there is this lacking overlap of, you know, contrasting ideas that could be woven together in interesting ways. There's all this resistance. We want to think the same as one another and see the world in the exact same way, or someone's right or someone's wrong. But poetry has this way of, you know, creating metaphor and juxtaposition and balancing, you know, analogies and similes and weaving things together that would otherwise probably be separate. And for me, that practice has helped me fully open up to people who are different than me, because it shows me where we intersect. And I think the intersections offer connection, and they offer a lot of information to show, you know, where we aren't lining up and why, and how to have compassion for those places, and how to show up to those places with maybe a little bit more insight, because when my mind is tuned in this poetic way to an experience of connecting with someone, I'm much more able to see where we align and where we don't, and then find the beauty or intrigue in that, as opposed to being closed off and offended.
Yeah. You shared a story while I was researching this interview, and it was such a beautiful story. You did share a story about meeting a man who actually owned a big forest, which he uses for selling timber. And at the same time, you are an activist and, like you said, an earth lover. And this juxtaposition, and it became a great friendship. And you were able to also start through, you know, the beginning, the initial moment was poetic, I'm assuming. And through being able to see the many different layers and sides, you were able to also meet in a very good place. And I thought that was just such a that was such a beautiful example about how, when we can hold, you know, there's a saying over here in Germany. It's like, if you don't agree with each other, figure out how to make the perfect potato. How do they make the perfect potato salad? Kind of thing. You know, it's like find a way to meet, find the way to breathe together, find the way. And do you want to share a short version of that story, or is it a little bit too long?
No, I can condense the idea of it. And, you know, it's great because, yes, that started because I wrote a poem for my friend Neil in public on my typewriter, as I had many, many other times. And I didn't know who he was. And then he later wrote me and had me write another poem for his wife, who had passed away. And he wasn't able to put her to rest because he couldn't find something appropriate and special enough to say. And so he met me and he thought, I'll get this poem. And it wasn't until I'd had many experiences with him connecting about this poem and about his family and his grief and his loss and really seeing his heart, did I then realize that he is the senior vice president of this huge timber company. And this is an example of a very unlikely friendship that came out of this poetic exchange, because I was able to see him as a human first. I was able to not dehumanize him and put him in this, you know, category of otherness or of evil or of bad or this, like, you know, person who I would never want to talk to. Instead, he was this tender man who had approached me through poetry. And that experience led to, I mean, we're still very close friends, and we've also done some interesting work together in years past of connecting like with local activists and setting aside acres of forest that will not be cut in the name of, you know, trying to have an open conversation and finding a place of common ground. But I will add that after years of sitting with this practice and writing many poems for many people who I would have an unlikely connection with, I still think that there's a line that gets drawn where we have to recognize our limitations. And I can see that coming up for people a lot right now in the activist community. And, you know, you're not always able to mend the entire picture or do the great work of the world, but you can still find a human connection with someone, and that can just be healing in a really personal way. Like, it might not change the world in this grand scale, but the friendship that I have with Neil allows me to be open to seeing that that might happen with someone else who is an unlikely person for me to connect with. And just knowing that kind of helps me move through the world in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful practice. That's what you're talking about when you're always talking about poetic mindset. I think it's a great thing. It's not that we need to write poetry, which is would be a great practice, or maybe we start reading poetry, but when we start seeing in these poetic ways or sensing, then there's a lot of goodness that can come out of it. Jacqueline, there's a quote by Hermann Hesse, and I saw it in your book, and it says, "I have always believed, and I still believe, that whatever good or bad fortune may come our way, we can always give it meaning and transform it into something else." So coming back to these complex issues, I mean, you're obviously an activist for the earth, and there are many people doing amazing work, and it can be quite frustrating. In the midst of this pandemic, we also have a global climate crisis. And what role does transformation play in your work? How do you deal with all these heavy emotions that are there, such as grief and loss? And how do you work through them? I mean, we talked a little bit about seeing beauty and everything, but I mean, it's really hard to know that, yeah, the animals are going extinct and the glaciers are melting and we don't have that many years left. So how do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's that same concept of the balancing of hope and hopelessness at the same time. And for me, there's a lot of ways that comes into play with my work, but even just in my personal practice of like, how do I ground myself and take care of myself enough to do the best I can and just know that all of my effort is energy that's being put out into the human story, into the universe, into, you know, whatever this grand mystery is, and that it might not be enough. It actually might not. I have a friend, Marley Grace, who just came out with a new book, and she has this great chapter about, you know, we have this concept in the wellness world that you could tell yourself over and over again that you are enough, I'm enough, I'm enough. But that it's actually also really healthy and important practice to just be like, it's okay, I might actually not be able to be enough today. I might not be able to give enough. And that's just part of what it is to be in this great complex story together on this planet, is that we see all of these outcomes that are possible. We've already thought of all of the tools. We have created the methods to take care of the planet, to take care of one another, to do it really well, to transform the whole story. But there's just so much, and all of it is human, in the way of that transformation. There's so much slowing that, you know, greed and all these efforts to create barriers to us accessing these tools that are there for us to use. And that can be so frustrating. And that is probably the thing that wears on me the most, is that we know what to do, but there's so much in the way of allowing us to do that. And the way that I keep going is just, what else is there to do? I look at it and I think, you know, I could either do nothing or I could do something. I don't know if the doing something, I don't know if it's going to change the outcome in a way that maybe we would hope for, but it will change the outcome. There's no doubt about it. You put energy into the system, something shifts. So, you know, with every poem that I write, with every connection that I have with another person, with every book of mine that gets into someone's hands that changes their mindset, I think, okay, that's one more opportunity for a great shift, for a great change to happen. And we have seen throughout human history that great shifts and changes do happen. So why not believe that that's possible?
Yeah, we have to believe it's possible. And yet then we come back to awe and this deep acceptance of just relaxing with what is, right? I think that that's probably the dance. Maybe that is the dance. Like one moment we feel like we can deeply change a system, and the other moment we feel like maybe it's good to just surrender for the day and let the wind brush our cheeks and drink a lemonade or something. Can you give us a practice that can help us focus on what our purpose is on the earth?
Yeah. I have, there's a whole section in the book about connecting with your purpose. And to me, I mean, this ties into directly being a writer and knowing why you want to write, who your audience is, who you're trying to write for. But it's more than just writing. It's also just so affirmative to reconnect with your sense of purpose. And, you know, I give a lot of permission around the fact that many people don't know what their purpose is, and that there's a lot of pressure to connect with your purpose. But I do think that it's kind of inside of everyone waiting to be identified. And most of the time we just don't give ourselves enough time and space to practice, to find out what it is. So this whole chapter kind of goes over how I connect to my purpose as a writer, and I see myself in service to the earth through my writing. But then it goes to tell people, you know, you can create a practice around discovering purpose that kind of looks like a list. I wrote this poem called My Poetic Purpose, and it's a little long to read, but I basically just kind of list all of the things that I would like to do with my work, that I do with my poetry. And, you know, you can get as creative as you want. I say, you know, you can be also like very vague and universal when you write this. It doesn't have to be so specific and personal. But you just have to ask yourself, you know, why you want to write? Why do you want to create? What do you think your voice has to offer? And then you let that offering be enough, no matter how unassuming or bold it is, because sometimes people's purpose is really simple. You know, they're just trying to take care of their family. They're just trying to keep their life going on a day-to-day basis. But another level of that questioning is, what are you doing to support something greater than yourself? Are you creating something to help alleviate suffering? Are you working to figure yourself out so that you can offer up a whole version of your spirit to those around you? And how are you doing this? Are you doing this while you're communicating? Are you doing this while you're writing or creating art? Because there's all types of purpose. And I think each one is crucial for our work as writers, but it's also just crucial for our work as humans in general.
That's a good reminder when we go outside, even if we go to a shop, to say, are we going to speak with words of kindness, or what would we like to create for a day? So do you think this understanding what our purpose is a little bit different than having a clear audience in mind while we're writing? And if we have a clear audience, let's say I'm writing only for myself healing, or I'm writing for, you know, audience of kids, or I'm writing for more a universal audience, how does, I wanted to say the word target market, which is a really non-poetic word in this moment, but how does the audience shift our choice of words that we might choose, or the form that we're going to give that poem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's definitely more of like a practice-based idea that is so great for a starting place when you're thinking about writing, because if you're just writing for yourself, you can write whatever you want. You never have to edit it. You can write any words you want to write. But if you're trying to write for a broader audience, then this is where my favorite idea comes in, which is that of accessibility. So when I'm writing, I'm trying to write for everyone, and that means I have to edit accordingly. I have to choose words and images that are as accessible as possible and as inviting and welcoming as possible, but also at the same time being interesting and not using, you know, trite language, but using my own unique set of language. And that mixture is, it's a craft, it's a balance, and that takes a lot of practice to find that. And to me, that's like a really fun part of the practice, is discovering how can I create work that is accessible, that is welcoming, but that is also interesting and unique. And I think that's when you start playing with language in that way, you start finding the door that is yours to open as a writer.
Yeah, I was just reflecting when you were talking, because I could imagine that it's, in one way, it's difficult, because when you become very universal, then you go for the word bird instead of whippoorwill or instead of loon.
Exactly.
Or maybe, you know. But at the same time, I was thinking about how I love just simple, a fresh baked bread, or, you know, something so simple, right? And so I was just, when I was listening to your talk, I was thinking, maybe it's like food, you know, if it gets too exotic all the time, you can almost not, sometimes you just need a good soup, or sometimes you just need a carrot salad, or you don't need the fancy pantsy stuff, you know?
Yeah, especially when it comes to figuring out the deepest concepts of the universe, which is typically what a poet tries to do. Sometimes it's best to do that through the lens of a simple soup, you know, and not crazy esoteric language. Because I think oftentimes people are maybe turned off by poetry because they have been taught that it is this challenging, esoteric language that they're going to get into if they read a poem. But truthfully, there's so many poets who actually lend themselves to a much more welcoming environment than maybe we've been taught.
Beautiful. Jacqueline, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back. And for all of those you guys out there, you can always listen to the show again at omtimes.com/IOM. We'll be back with Jacqueline in just a few moments.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Consistently attract soulmate clients, begin showing up on brand, monetizing on your calling. Welcome all spiritual coaches, leaders, healers, light workers, and practitioners to a show that turns you on in your business and amplifies your magnetism. I'm host, catalyst, and spiritual business coach Rosalind Fung, and I'm here to journey with you into the juicy and help you discover where the real gaps are. Ignite your mindset and soul with strategies and systems as each episode takes you to the sweet spot that activates your soulgasmic business by tuning in on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Mountain. Join me for your light language activation, and let's magnetize and monetize.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Cara Johnstad, this is Voice Rising, and today I am with Jacqueline Suskin, author, poet, and activist, and we are exploring poetry and talking about her newest release, Every Day Is a poem, a book that is out there, a great, I can highly recommend it, to be inspired to start your own poetry practice and or give it as a gift to somebody else, or maybe just meet with a good friend and start writing poems in a beautiful cafe, or that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about, while I was reading your book, I was thinking about how nice it is to sometimes have a good friend that you can, sometimes it's good to write poetry alone, but do you find it helpful sometimes also to meet people and just bounce ideas off of each other?
Oh yeah, I love to share my work. I mean, I think poetry is actually an oral tradition, so my favorite thing is to get together with a friend and just read them things that I'm working on, because not only is it just nice to share and connect in that way, but it's also really important to hear yourself say your words aloud. And that just always gives me a lot of clarity, either to edit more or to just appreciate what I've written. And even going to what we were talking about earlier, you know, it's important to share your work, because then you understand how accessible it actually is. And, you know, if you're just writing for your friend, then maybe you're less pressured to make it exact and perfect, but you get to engage with it nonetheless in this really special way.
You speak in your book about the challenge to stay open. How does vulnerability and being fragile help us? How does taking off our armor help us move more gracefully and compassionately in this world?
I think so often so much of what's happening is just asking us to protect ourselves and close off. And that when we're in that state, when we're distracted, when we're overwhelmed, when we're energetically drained, we don't have the same ability to tap into the infinite offering that is this life, because we are, our senses are dulled or our energies are low. And so I think, you know, that question kind of makes me think of how important it is to care for yourself so that you can be open to the poetry of being alive, because in that, then your wellness kind of equals your ability to be creative and feel the wholeness of the world. And to me, that's a very vulnerable, open state. And yet in that openness and in that vulnerability is where I find my greatest inspiration. It's where I find all of my writing material. The book kind of walks you through accessing your pain and your past and your trauma, as well as your joy and your reasons to celebrate. And, you know, just looking into those vulnerable, tender places and finding how much your offerings actually arrive in those places, like that's where a lot of poetic expression and information comes from.
We each have our individual stories, we each have our past, we each have this future that we're designing, and we each have our perceptions, and we also have this collective ache. So how can we use poetry, whether we're writing it in our own writing practice or whether we're reading some of the greatest poets? There's so many wonderful poets, therapeutically. How can we tap into that healing quality that poetry offers us?
Yeah, I have this section in the book that's called How to Use Your Pain. And it walks through all these questions that kind of lead you back to poems or topics for poems that might soothe you or heal you or just let you maybe lean into the hard places with a purpose of reflecting that back to yourself on the page, or, you know, just indulging in the fact that you've been through so much and that there's really nowhere else you need to be but in those feelings. Just like if you're lost and begging, or if you're beginning and asking, or you're searching for something, just like saying true, that's true. All of that's true. And you can say yes to that adversity. And then there's where you find all of this poetry, is in this acceptance that it is indeed hard to be alive, that it's hard to be alive for the most famous of poets. It's hard to be alive for the most creative, interesting geniuses. It's hard for all of us. And that also is this sort of well of limitless inspiration. And that kind of makes me want to read a poem from the book, if you don't mind.
Yeah, read. Yeah, please read. Read from your book. Beautiful.
It's called The Relief of Our Endless Becoming. What is it that we're doing here? Go ask the largest tree in sight. It answers, we're just meant to make and make, reaching toward the highest place. It's all a guess, this growth, this work. Someday we topple over, burn, break, unfurl, and our particles become another form. The black space between the stars, flesh and limb, rope and rose, graphite, grass, or breath, there is always something new for us to be.
Wow, beautiful. There's always something new for us to be. Goes back to this place also of this continuous growth and at the same time a surrender to deep acceptance of what is, right? Mm-hmm. It's a stunning poem. How would you, or what are one or two tools that we would have to start writing a poem? I mean, we're staring at a blank piece of white paper, and sometimes it scares the we get scared. We're like, oh my God, it's a white piece of paper. Oh my gosh. Like, and then now I'm being asked to write something. Truth. That's a five letter word that is big, bigger than five letters. How do you suggest we start?
Well,
on this adventure,
I say in the book to start with this idea of awe, and I make there's this very simple exercise that I love to do that helps me get going if I'm ever kind of just if I'm distracted. Basically, I don't typically experience a sense of writer's block. I don't even really relate to that. What I think of is sometimes I don't necessarily know what I'm feeling or what's going on in my life, and I need to give myself some space to connect to that. And so I have these little practices at the beginning of the book, and one of them is close your eyes and point in any direction. And when you open your eyes, whatever object or thing you are pointing at, just try to write a page about that. So let's say, you know, you close your eyes and you open them and there's a stop sign there. Well, okay. What does the stop sign look like? Describe it. Who made the stop sign? What is it made of? How did it become a thing that has so much meaning in our life? Do you have a memory around it? You know, there's all these little questions you can ask yourself, but the point is just to kind of free write and not make yourself think, oh, I need to be writing a poem right now. It needs to make a shape on the page that looks like a poem, or it needs to sound like what I think a poem looks like. You know, there's another way you can do that is just picking up some commonplace object in your kitchen and giving that object meaning, you know, asking yourself, well, what does this mean to me? Like, what place does this have in my life? In the book, I use for myself the pencil. And, you know, looking at the pencil, of course, I connect the pencil as a writer, but I also think the pencil is just such an incredible tool because it's so specific and it's made of earth and it is always accessible and it's very familiar and it just kind of softens me to my practice and it has so much meaning, but really it's just this commonplace number two pencil.
And many people, I have to say, I have it also when I'm composing, but I think that people move at some point onto pens, but the truth is we spend our whole childhood writing in pencil, and what's so fabulous about pencil is that you can do the shading and the darker and lighter, but you can also erase it if you feel like it, right? And it's, I don't know why I don't see as many pencils being given out as I do pens. But I think
that to me is a poem. I think you could write a poem about that.
Yeah,
like, I love that as many... a good topic for a poem.
Yeah, see, you get all these pens from banks and I don't know what, but we need to give out some pencils. Exactly. talk about, you know, just talk about too about awakening all of our senses. I mean, what we hear a lot is this is such a beautiful practice, the poetry, the poetic mindset. It's really about attention and awareness. You know, so many people spend years in meditation and one could just be at markets and write poems and go to cafes and sit in the living room and write beautiful poems, because whenever our attention is there, we slow down and we become more caring towards the things. So is there a practice to help us heighten our senses? We don't only have what we see, but of course, how do these things sound and smell and taste and all those good things?
Yeah, I think that's just such a fun and kind of always accessible practice that you can delve into, is just touching on each of your senses and bringing at least one sense into the poem that you're writing. I mean, mm-hmm. I like to try to sometimes, I'll write a poem that includes every sense. And so you can do that in a straightforward way, but you can also do that in, you know, a metaphorical way, or just a way that helps you appreciate your senses and kind of look at each one and think, oh, how did that sense play into this moment that was important to me? And that I think is just a great trick to kind of give a lot more meat to your poem, because it will connect every part of being human to what you're writing.
Very beautiful. I'm looking at all my questions. I was wondering if you'd like to read one last piece or excerpt from this wonderful book, Every Day is a Poem. I think you released it in summer, didn't you, in 2020?
Yep, just came out, actually. It just came out this month.
Wow, we're lucky. Yeah, we're lucky to have you.
Yeah. Woohoo! I think I'll read this part from the chapter about joy, because we've been
Beautiful.
Talking about pain and darkness. But to me, I think, actually writing can be a real practice of celebration. So this part is called Exercise for Joy. Make a ritual out of joy. Be in service to your joy by noticing it. Let this observation be a routine, a ceremonial practice of tending to your exuberance. The more joy we feel, the better chance we have of extending such delight to others. Hallelujah, you woke up and saw the brilliant sun again. This thought is the day's first poem. Oh joy, the wilderness is large and secretive. Write about it. Wow, you are loved by a gentle woman and she sings so sweetly. Write her a letter and find poetry to celebrate her goodness. When someone is getting married, they often write poetic vows of dedication and potent promises. When someone graduates from college, we commend them with verse. It's natural to fall into poetry when we are struck by joy. Let the work of words reveal joy in your thoughts, on the page, in any way that pays tribute to the pleasure of being alive, so that you feel it fully on each occasion.
Wow, it sounds like a very cool thing to really invite more joy into our lives. It's you say that so beautifully. It's also a form of activism, right? To offer joy to the moment, and not only wait for the wedding or wait for the graduation, mm-hmm. but to offer joy in every day to our beloveds and the people that we meet. Jacqueline, share with our audience your homepage, and do you do any online retreats, or do you have anything coming up where people can connect with you in person?
It's hard to connect in person right now, but my website is jacquelinesuskin.com, and you can go there and sign up for my newsletter. And I try to do a lot of work around the book online right now, but hopefully mm-hmm. in the new year, we'll open up our writing retreats again.
Beautiful. Do you do them also online, or do you do them more in person in these beautiful retreat centers around the world?
Or in
Northern
California?
I do
try to do them online. Yeah, this book lends itself to that very well. So it's been nice to do things like that. So I don't have any exact dates, but I do believe there's one in December. So something coming up.
Nice. And can anybody jump in and start? Even if they're a beginner staring at a white page with a number 2 pencil in their hand?
Yeah, I think I like to imagine that when I just ramble and talk and guide folks through the book or through my ideas, that it just will maybe spark some kind of beginning point for inspiration, which is really all you need. You don't have to worry about form or exactness. You just want to let yourself find that opening.
Beautiful. I love that so much. I myself had many moments, good moments with the writing teachers, and also some very tough moments where I felt like I was wearing a corset that was a little bit too tight. So I thank you for the generosity of inviting people to explore poetry in such a wonderful way. Again, whether we're reading it, reading it out loud, or whether we are writing it, or whether we are just living that poetic lifestyle, that way of, you know, speaking, yeah, offering joy to the world. It's been great having you here on the show at Voice Rising, and I wish you much success with your new book.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.